Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this morning's webinar. Good Lord, second installment this week of webinars. So I hope you're not getting too bored of us. Today, hopefully something more exciting, as we're joined by Tim Frome, the Legal Director at Landlord Action. We're going to be discussing what the Debt Respite Scheme, otherwise known as Breathing Space, means for you as letting agents, and also providing an update from the court. As usual, we have Holly conducting the slides. If there is a slight lag, apologies, and indeed, if either of us drop off, we'll jump onto the webinar as quickly as we possibly can. We'll also be running a poll today, which you may well see pop up on your screen. It'd be great if you complete that. We're going to track the feedback from that poll and then revert that back to you at the end of the webinar. And it's obviously pertinent to the discussion points that we're looking at today in today's webinar. So moving on, if we just move the slide to the next one, there's the poll for you guys. For those of you joining who don't know who Good Lord are, we're an award-winning lettings software. We automate the lettings process, making sure that anything from payments, contract generation, through to compliance is all covered off, and ensuring you as letting agents have more time to focus on the things that really move the needle for your business, like growth and winning new landlords. If you want to know more about Good Lord, there'll be obviously a slide at the end, as you're probably all well accustomed to now, where you can visit our website and indeed book a demonstration. But today is really about the Breathing Space Initiative, and indeed what we're recognising that the courts are doing at the moment. We're going to cover three things today. So the Debt Respite Scheme, aka Breathing Space. We're going to talk about how the scheme could impact you as letting agents. And I think part of this is really about understanding exactly what it is, but also, and I'm sure Tim will talk us through, understanding sort of the gravity of what this actually means, because we just don't know yet how effective this scheme is going to be. But we'll try and predict how it could affect you guys as letting agents. Lastly, we'll cover how possession cases are faring in lockdown 3.0. It's obviously a contentious point for many agents, given the fact that landlords have been sort of shut out, I suppose, for a long, long period. We're hearing cases, and I think Tim's got a few cases where there's, you know, 2 years worth of arrears or more that's built up because of the timing of events. So we're going to cover that for you and give you an insight to exactly what's going on from a court perspective. So, as I said, I'm joined by Tim Frome. Hopefully Tim is there on the line. He is, I think. Hi there, Tim.
Hi, Ollie. Thank you very much for inviting me on today again.
No worries at all. Pleasure to have you. A fellow Tottenham Hotspur fan, so always a pleasure. Yeah. But for those who don't know you, it would be good if you could just introduce yourself, please.
I'll just plug my laptop in, will I remember? Is it sort of battery about to die? Right, okay, yes. My name's Tim Frome. I'm the legal director at Landlord Action. Many of you probably know Landlord Action as a specialist tenant eviction law firm. My colleague is Paul Champolina, and he is well known around the industry and also for a quite popular Channel 5 television program, which has been the new series started last week and is now called Evicted Nightmare Tenants. So you can get an idea of the type of work that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis through Landlord Action. But Landlord Action is also part of the Hamilton Fraser Group. And again, those of you that use some schemes within the property industry, you'll know of My Deposits. So we run a tenancy deposit protection scheme. We run the property redress scheme. So that's a redress scheme for letting agents. We also run the client money protection scheme, and we have a well-regarded landlord insurance policy as well, total landlord insurance, which is used by many landlords across the country. So, yeah, and my role as an associate director at Hamilton Fraser is I oversee different legal issues that face the whole group, as well as being a legal director at Hamilton Fraser. I've been working within the private rented sector for over 10 years. I've been a landlord myself. And just been having to get stuck into all of the different issues that we've been facing throughout COVID, the different changes in regulations. Been on the end of the line with our friends at the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, with the Ministry of Justice, providing them with statistics and advice and guidance about what's really been happening out on the ground, hopefully helping them to shape some of their policy. We also work closely with the National Residential Landlords Association as well to assist them with putting together policy work, which has hopefully been assisting the government with what they've been trying to change as well. So yeah, that's a bit about me and the business really.
Nice and busy, I think it's safe
to say. Yeah, it's fair to say, yes.
And I think what we're seeing as well is there's a number of companies that are working quite closely together, organizations that are working quite close together. We very much enjoy working closely with the Hamilton Fraser Group and indeed, hopefully the way around as well, Tim. But there's a multitude of businesses that actually do integrate and do talk and do try and ensure that, you know, the things that we believe from the feedback from our customers are important. They're fed back to the appropriate sources. So, you know, I recognize the work that you've been doing recently, especially, Tim, is extremely beneficial, hopefully, for a lot of letting agents and landlords in the UK. Yeah. Today, specifically, we're going to talk about breathing space or the debt respite scheme.
Yes.
What we're going to try to do here, guys, is cover some of the granularity as much as we possibly can. So apologies if it does become a little heavy, but we're going to try and explain it in the simplest terms we can. The caveat to all of this, I suppose, Tim, is that we don't know the effect of this yet. We have the paper, which arguably is a pretty good government paper, actually, by all standards, which is quite detailed. So can you take the attendees through exactly what the debt respite scheme is if they haven't heard of it yet?
Yeah, so it's a very good introduction, actually, Ollie. I have to be honest, obviously, these regulations have not actually come into force yet. They're due to come into force on the 4th of May, and it's going to be all new. So we are going to have to be an element of suck it and see with exactly how tenants use these debt respite regulations. But what I'll try to do now is give an overview of how we see it, of how the guidance has set out what the aims and the objectives of the regulations are, and how, just using our experience and our knowledge of the industry and what we know to be behaviour in terms of both tenants and landlords and agents, what we foresee occurring here. But in summary, this scheme is set under the Debt Respite Scheme Breathing Space Moratorium and Mental Health Crisis Moratorium England and Wales Regulations 2020. And it was actually passed last year. And it's not just about the property industry, believe it or not. This is actually regulations that are in place to help people with all kinds of qualifying debts. It just so happens that it's going to be very relevant for particular attendees on this webinar and the industry generally, because it does cover rent arrears. So it does cover situations where a tenant will have a debt that is being paid, and that can be a trigger for a tenant being able to try to use these regulations.
And Tim, just on that, to be clear for the guys attending. So this isn't a result of the pandemic, is it? This is something that's been in the pipeline for actually, what, about 4 or 5 years, if not more, through campaigning initiatives from different parties. So the timing of this is interesting because, of course, you could argue it's more relevant now in the rental space than it would have been 13 months ago. But it isn't a direct answer to the pandemic
This is not based purely on COVID. Actually, it got delayed. The implementation got delayed while the government were looking at the impact, really. So this isn't regulations that have been put in place off the back of the COVID pandemic. They were planned by the government and a lot of work has got into putting these together. It just so happens that now is the time that we need to start really thinking about it and looking at the impact, because it is coming into play, as we say, on the 4th of May. I think obviously you've got the slides here that there's two different types of breathing space that's going to be provided to tenants. So there's something called the standard breathing space. So a standard breathing space is something where the person has one of these qualifying debts, of which rent arrears will be one. Couple of other types of qualifying debts, just to give a bit of context, are credit cards, store cards, personal loans, payday loans, overdrafts, and utility bills. So it does cover quite a lot of different types of debts that a person may have. What they are able to do is go and visit a debt advice provider. And it can't just be any debt advice provider. It has to be a debt advice provider who is authorised by the Financial Conduct Authority to offer debt counselling, or it could be someone within a local authority where they actually formally provide debt advice to residents. They're the two sets of debt advice providers that are able to confirm that there is a person that is suitable for one of these breathing spaces.
So with that in mind, Tim, do we expect functions like assistant advice, for example, to be front and center of this kind of initiative, or would they not quite qualify under that?
If I was them, I would be looking specifically at how they can get themselves authorized. I haven't seen any publicity released by Shelter or Crisis or any of these other organizations yet to say that they are actually going to be authorized to do this. But if they are not themselves, they will be finding out the people who are, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit of a watch this space to see what happens here. But as I say, to be authorized by the Financial Conduct Authority, it could be more someone that, when you get these organizations that help people arrange their debts. Mm. So they enter into IVAs or these other kind of arrangements with creditors. So it's possible that it might actually have to be one of those type of organizations that are able to enter into these. But as I say, we haven't seen yet exactly. No, I haven't seen any adverts, let's put it that way, for organizations
right.
that are offering these yet. But as I say, once it does happen, I think it'll happen quite quick. So
it's that caveat, I suppose, Tim, that means we just don't know how widespread this is going to be utilized, because arguably on paper, that would suggest that only a small proportion of people that say fall in rent arrears actually have a route to this kind of initiative. That being said, as we've clearly said, we don't know how far this spreads. So we will keep.
You'll keep everyone updated when we know more. But
exactly.
What's interesting is obviously the process for entering into one of these things is not yet clear. However, the impact of once someone does enter into one of these things is quite serious. So there are two elements to this, definitely. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. But let me just, the mental health crisis process is actually where someone is also in the same situation, so they've got qualifying debt, but they're also under observation by a mental health professional. And that mental health professional is going to have to provide information to the FCA authorized debt advice counsellor to say that the trigger's there for them to be eligible under the mental health side of things. And where there's a difference here is that if someone enters into a standard breathing space, this will be for a period of 60 days, but the person can only enter into one of those a year. So that's the impact there in terms of timing. With the mental health one, they last 30 days, but as long as the issues that the person is facing are ongoing, they can keep entering into new ones every 30 days. So this is where there's going to be a little bit of a difference between the two types of breathing space that person can enter into. So I think that's a bit.
And on that basis. Yeah. So on that basis, this initiative is time sensitive. And what I mean by that is outside of the mental health category, it's almost like a one chance saloon, right, Tim? Because ultimately, once you've applied for this, what this doesn't do is recognize your liability. It doesn't recognize that your liability goes away in the future. In fact, the wording actually compels the individual to still be liable for any future payments. So can we just talk through how that would work in the context of rent, maybe?
Yeah, so again, it's not fully clear exactly how a debt advisor is going to interpret some of these requirements, but from what we can see from the guidance, the breathing space is really just is what it says on the tin, so to speak, is to give some breathing space for the person to rearrange their finances so that they are able to meet the liabilities that they have and are owing. So there's not any element to this to say that an amount owing is written off or anything like that. It really should just be a situation whereby the person is given some professional advice by the debt advisor on how to rearrange their finances to be able to pay the amounts owing ongoing or in the future. And if there is ongoing liabilities that are owing, so for example, the rent, that the tenant is still liable to pay that, and they should be paying it as they're going along, really. But again, we'll have to wait and see what happens in practice once tenants do enter into these breathing spaces to see what happens. Because once the breathing space has ended, so to speak, as I say, all of the money that was owing is still there. So the landlord or the agent is still going to have the capability to recover that money in the future using legal means. It just means that the tenant will have had that breathing space for those 60 days to try and rearrange their finances to actually help them to hopefully cover the amounts that are owing.
And that's an important point, isn't it? Because the advisor has to recognise or should recognise, again, we're dealing with hypotheticals here, should recognise that these actions are only applicable where the tenant actually has a chance of making up the debt, right? These aren't designed to go, okay, you've got 10 months worth of arrears, you don't have a job, you have no source of income, no savings, you have further debt on your credit card, et cetera, et cetera. If there is no possible, obvious way forward, then actually this shouldn't come into play, should it?
It shouldn't. And the debt advisor would be not acting in accordance with the regulations if they just sign someone off for a breathing space in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm trying to sort of position the questions were coming in on the Q&A throughout this slide deck. So we're going to cover some of these off later when it comes more to some of them. But I'll let me try and pick some of the ones out, Tim, that have come in so far. There's plenty coming in. One of the questions from Gemma is, does this mean that a notice can't be served either? And I think the answer to that, right, Tim, is actually in that period, you can't take any action, call.
I think this is on the next slide, isn't it, when we're talking about the impact to the parties off the back of one of these. But this is what I mean about the fact that we don't know exactly how tenants are going to enter into these in the first place. But if they do enter into one of these, that the impact is quite serious, in that you basically, for those 60 days from when you're informed that the tenant has entered into one of these, you literally cannot do anything in terms of chasing the money from them. You can't contact them. You can't serve a notice. Actually, Holly, it might be worth just moving on to the next slide, actually.
Just before we do, if we can, Tim, there's probably a bit more pertinent question just to the more holistic view coming in from Gemma. Can anybody with debt apply for the standard breathing space? Is there a figure that the debt must be before they can do it?
Again, we in the guidance, it doesn't make any reference to a specific figure. So it has to be, a debt which is a qualifying debt. Then it really should be the job of the debt advisor to be able to look and see whether there's any way that that person can cover that debt in the short or immediate term, really, before entering into one of these breathing spaces. Because if it is only a small amount of money, then really they should be able to try and find a way to get that covered straight away. It's only when it's going to be a slightly larger amount of money and they're going to need to use the skills that they should have in that role to be able to help the party to rearrange their finances and cover the amount.
And that's a 12, if I remember the wording correctly, I might be wrong here, Tim, I think it said it's a 12-month window on this breathing space initiative, i.e. you can action this, but you can't then go again within the preceding 12 months. Is that right?
You can only enter into one every 12 months for a standard.
And every 12 months, So this is a, this is a, like I say, more of a one chance saloon, I suppose. And I think the point, I suppose, here, before we move on to the effect for letting agents, is that this wasn't devised for arrears. Arrears are encapsulated in this, but this actually comes with the backdrop of payday loans, store cards, credit cards, etc. So we're probably yet to see, as I think we've said a few times now, the actual knock-on effect into, say, arrears. But let's talk about that from a lettings agent perspective. So from an agent's perspective, how is the scheme going to work for them? Do they have to do anything in terms of, do they have a role to play here? Or actually, is this very much on the tenant? And if they choose to go down that route, ultimately, that would be their choice. This is on the back also of a question from let me just find the name, sorry, apologies, a question from name not provided, there we go, as to whether agents should be signposting tenants to this kind of scheme.
There's not, again, the regulations don't appear to suggest that a person should be signposted to this option for them if they are unable to pay. What we do know is that from dealing with possession claims at the moment, there is an onus on landlords to be explaining what the effect of the COVID pandemic has been on the tenant. Also supposed to make reference on the claim form as to whether the tenant is claiming any form of benefits as well. So there is an argument that if the person is in quite severe rent arrears or has quite a severe financial situation, that some questions should be being asked of the tenant as to whether they are entering into that kind of arrangement, whether they are, that they've thought about applying for universal credit or any other benefits they're entitled to, whether that also includes taking advice on entering into a breathing space as well. We haven't seen that yet. So, it's going to be a bit of a suck it and see and wait approach. But it'd be interesting to know that there's a lot of information that's provided to tenants as part of the claim process now, particularly at the review hearing stage. And the tenants are given the opportunity to obtain free legal advice from either duty solicitors or from they're given information on the notices about different areas in which they can obtain advice. And at that point, it's likely that the other third parties may be pointing tenants in this direction. Whether they would have then the time, I guess, to make the appointment, get it all signed off and what have you, again, we're not too sure yet, because again, we're not too sure exactly how long it's going to take for someone to actually get signed off for one of these breathing spaces, but it's something that we have to be mindful for the future and something that could happen.
Yeah, I think a lot of stress is going to fall on the debt advisor party themselves, because if it's felt that these are just handed out without any kind of recognition of the reality of the situation, then you're ultimately more than likely going to see legal challenge, maybe not through the standard scheme, because it, albeit, you know, what, 60 days worth of breathing space, but definitely from a mental health perspective, if it's felt that that process is just sort of rubber stamped and it's month after month after month after month after month, I can see how there's going to be more scrutiny right under how that's been qualified for. And again, that's part of the unknowns, but I suppose it really does highlight the point that, you know, from a protection point of view, you know, as landlords and letting agents, you need to take all the relevant steps you can to have the most comprehensive level of protection in place, whether that be a rent protection policy, whether that be having a good level of understanding of your rights and having legal support through firms like Tim's. You know, frankly, it's about making sure that you've got a peace of mind there. If these things happen, you're not left out in the cold, because we could see delays because of this. But in terms of the qualifying criteria, we've covered this somewhat already. This is one of those webinars where I think we're going to jump from thing to thing. And I definitely want to be guided that way by the questions coming in. So forgive us if this feels like it's out of sync a little bit. But let's just double down on who can apply for this scheme. This is any adult in the UK or England, sorry, that can apply for this scheme, Tim?
Yep. They have to be an individual. They have to owe a qualifying debt. They live or usually reside in England or Wales. So obviously at the moment, there's not many people that are being able to travel around, but has the reference to usually residing. And then it says not have a debt relief order or an individual voluntary arrangement, so IVA or interim order. So basically someone that's already gone down a formal step in terms of an arrangement with their creditors. So you can't get one in that situation. You can't, if you've already had one in the previous 12 months, then you can't enter into a new one. There's a couple of interesting points in the guidance, though, that says that the debt advisor must be satisfied that their client meets both of the following conditions. And these are that their client cannot or is unlikely to be able to repay all or some of their debt, and that the breathing space is appropriate for their client. So this makes it clear that at that point in time, that they need the 60 days to really be able to look at their finances and reschedule the way that they're dealing with their money, and that period of time will be suitable to enable the person to actually be able to cover the amounts in the future.
And so the individual has applied for this scheme. We've got a question around whether this just applies to tenants or not. It doesn't. This is for any individual in the UK with a qualifying debt. So arguably, you could see landlords in this position too.
If a landlord has a qualifying debt, then there's no argument they could.
Exactly right. Well. And, you know, arguably after the last 12, 13 months, landlords are in a very difficult position. So this most definitely can affect both sides of your business to a certain degree.
Mortgage arrears are actually a qualifying debt.
Exactly right. So this is something that could actually find it the other way around than the perception of it, maybe. But let's hope not. Either way. Another question coming in, which I think is really pertinent, is how do we know for certain they've entered into these arrangements? Because, you know, we know from a tenant perspective, especially tenants who are maybe not following the right processes, they can latch on to maybe like, I've got breathing space. You can't do any of this. Yep. This is a formalized process, right? Which is then signed off by the debt advisor. And this, I want to couple this question in from, unfortunately no name given on that, with a question from Lizzie. Just recovering that this has to be a qualified debt advisor. So this is going to be a process that has the relevant documentation where they must provide that to either the agent and landlord or indeed say the rent protection insurer or legal team that are proceeding those legal processes.
Exactly. So it has to be signed off by the authorised debt advice provider. There's also a database kept by the Insolvency Service of everyone. There's some guidance about that.
Okay, so on that then, while you're finding that guidance, do we expect this to feature as part of an individual's credit file or too early to know, Tim?
Again, too early to know, but the fact that it's going to be on an Insolvency Service database, they are taking a formal process here and that they're going through, they're using legislation to provide themselves with some form of break from having to pay creditors. That's certainly a possibility that there will be a knock-on effect to their credit rating off the back of this.
And for those individuals, unfortunately, again, no name given, but whilst those debts, for the debt that's been applied, and this is important here, I think, to get this way around, so correct me if I'm wrong here, Tim, for the debt that's been applied for the breathing space, because it doesn't apply to all debt and it doesn't apply to any future debt, the presumption is that any interest payable will be stopped. So effectively, they have 60 days to pay nothing. They can't be touched at all, can they, in that period of time?
No, they can't be chased directly. So as we touched on just previously, they can't. So that means you can't email them, ring them up, ask them to pay the amounts that are owing at that point in time. You can't serve Section 8 notice on them if their renter is. If there is a claim ongoing in the courts, so you've already actually issued a claim, that claim, we're going to need formal clarification on this point, but it looks like we're going to have to contact the court to stay the matter for 60 days. Yep. So that will mean not having a hearing. I'll touch on it in a little bit, the review hearing or a substantive hearing, if the matter's ongoing. And also if you have managed to obtain a possession order, but then you become aware that the tenant's entered into a breathing space, you're not going to be able to apply for the bailiff, for the writ to enforce the possession order either for that time period. So these are all quite serious steps that need to be taken into consideration.
Just to ensure, letting agents aren't falling off their chairs at this stage, because that all sounds extremely scary. This does, though, just to reassure, this does come down to the timing of the application of the breathing space, right? That would suggest that in those scenarios you discussed there, Tim, that the application has come in, you know, at the very, very last second, even potentially after the last second. So it does come down to that. But again, our expectation, I think, between us both, Tim, is that actually if people are going to use it, that's probably when it will be used, because it just gives a further delay to essentially being removed from your home. But again, at that stage, if the scheme works, arguably because you've got to that point, you're past the point of no return anyway from a debt perspective.
And this is the point. If you're at the stage, particularly towards the end of a possession claim, and what we know with the amount of arrears that have been building up during this period, that there would seem to be little hope that the tenant will be able to pay off those arrears. So they shouldn't really, the debt advisor shouldn't be looking at the fact they've got £10,000 worth of rent arrears. Having a 60-day period to try and refinance some bits here and there is not going to be sufficient to be able to pay that off. So you'd like to think that the authorised debt advisors, who, as I say, they are, have to be FCA authorised, so that means they should be giving the correct advice in accordance with the law. They shouldn't be advising or applying for the person to enter into a breathing space in that kind of situation. If, for example, it was only 1 or 2 months rent arrears at the beginning of the process, and that some help could be provided to enable them to pay that amount off, then maybe it would be appropriate. So that's the kind of thing that we're going to have to see.
It is, but I think the fear around this, that this could be all encapsulating, it could completely drive the eviction process down to a very, very, very slow pace, maybe even slower than it is now, are maybe not as realistic as we think, given the appropriate steps we have to go through. But again, a lot leans on that debt advisor. If they are not doing their role properly, then ultimately that is going to allow this scheme to fall down and not deliver the appropriate action that it's designed to do. Now, I just want to get through some questions. We've got lots of them, which I imagine... 39 already. So I'm going to cover a few off whilst I'm reading them through, Tim, and correct me wrong here. Does this apply to private and unmanaged landlords? Yes, it's any individual in the UK. A question from Jackie. A question from Valerie Bannister. Hello, Valerie. If a tenant qualifies for the respite scheme, will a guarantor automatically be joined in this respite?
No.
And will they be notified by the FCA debt advisor? Just thinking of GDPR.
Of course. From what we understand, and I've spoken to some other legal individuals within the industry about guarantors, and we do not feel that guarantors will be affected. So if there is a guarantor, you can still speak to them to try and make sure that any amounts paying are paid. So they do not fall, if the tenant has the breathing space, it does not also encapsulate the guarantor. In terms of GDPR, it's always a touchy subject. I think what's likely to happen there is that the tenant themselves obviously give authorisation to the debt advisor to then provide information to all their creditors that they've entered into it, so that GDPR point is covered. If Valerie, I might have to cover this with Valerie afterwards, but if she's talking about the fact that we're then telling the guarantor that the tenant has entered into one of these breathing space procedures, I think we're going to have to look at what happens when we're actually given information about them. I think we're going to have to see what kind of notification is provided about that.
But arguably, Tim, on that, the guarantor is liable whether they're in breathing space or not, technically, or should be. So I suppose the route in which you approach is the important part, not the result, because they are liable for those monies. And actually, whether they're in breathing space, because they're not included in the breathing space initiative as an individual, is neither here nor there. It's simply that there's been a breach on the contract, and therefore it needs to be fulfilled.
Yeah, you'd think so. So,
fingers crossed. Again, some of this is unknown, and I feel bad that on a few points, then we'll have to see. But that's ultimately where we are with this, and this is just really about trying to give you as much foresight and credible foresight as we possibly can. So, just skipping through a few of the questions. A question from Chris Hoff: is this scheme being backdated? So, if a tenant's already in large rent arrears, can they apply? And my understanding is indeed yes. It's not essentially backdated, it's relevant to that individual circumstance at that point in time once the initiative starts. But if they're in large arrears, Chris, then ultimately they're going to have to prove that that's a manageable debt versus an unmanageable debt. And that again comes down to the debt advisor.
Exactly.
Let's have a look what else we have on here. A question from Alistair. Where a tenancy has an authorised occupier who is not on the tenancy agreement, who gets the breathing space option? If a legal action is pending against the tenant, can this whole action be put on 60-day hold?
So if an authorised occupier enters into one of the breathing space.
I think it's, I think Alison, ask me if you're not asking this, please do follow up afterwards. But I think what he's asking is if, say, the tenant themselves, the main tenant in the property, is included in the breathing space initiative, does that then automatically affect the authorised occupier?
Well, the authorised occupier is not a tenant on the tenancy. So,
and they have no legal rights.
They don't have any property, right? They don't have specific legal rights. But this does raise an interesting point about joint tenants, though. So you might have one joint tenant entering into a breathing space, and then what's the impact on the other joint tenants? So does that mean that you can't obviously contact that one tenant, but then they're jointly and severally liable in most situations? So that just means that the others are going to have to pick up the slack in the meantime. But
I think the wording does cover this, doesn't it, Tim? Yeah. I think it does cover joint tenants in terms of how they would both individually have to be part of the scheme in order to be protected by the scheme. And therefore, because they're joint and severally liable, ultimately tenant A is on breathing space, tenant B isn't, tenant B you can take the appropriate action against.
You can do, but you remember, if you're going to serve a Section 8 notice, it has to be on all the tenants in the property. So you can't just do it for Section 8 notice against one tenant.
So
in that situation, in terms of a court claim, one tenant could potentially manage to delay matters when it's only one person that's actually involved in this. So again, this is something that we're going to have to see when it occurs.
So you've mentioned Section 8, so I'm going to jump on that, because when I first read through the guidelines in this, it occurred to me this was specifically around the debt itself. It is not there to protect tenants from eviction. So a question in from, I think it is, yes, Kirsty. Hello, Kirsty. Can you serve a Section 8 notice for, say, antisocial behaviour if it's a separate issue? And our understanding is, indeed, you can take any other relevant action for any other breach of the agreement and continue with that without any barrier due to the Breathing Space Initiative. That's correct. Is that right, Tim?
Yep. So as long as the Section 8 notice isn't being served based on the renter, so you can't use grounds 8, 11 and 12, you can use the other grounds. You can also go down the Section 21 route as well, as long as you're not claiming any rent arrears in a non-accelerated claim off the back of that as well.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we're going to continue on these questions because they keep coming in, and I want to make sure we're trying to give them the points people want to understand rather than maybe the preset points we've made. But we are going to revert back to the slides shortly. A question coming in from Sasha Rose. Good morning. If the registered debt advisor comes to us with a proposal for paying the debt within that 60 days, say, are we required to accept that, even if it's not what they would deem satisfactory? And the point being here is this isn't a directive, right? This is a space to them to get sorted themselves, more so than a directive back to debtors.
That's correct. So I think it'd be interesting to see if the debt advisors doing their job properly, they should be proactively trying to come to arrangements with people to get the amounts paid. So it is possible that agents will start getting direct contact from these people to see if they can enter into arrangements. And what we do know is that forms of mediation and discussions with parties to try and keep tenancies ongoing, particularly while the pandemic's been going on, has been heavily favoured by the government and the courts. There's not actually any formal requirement to do so, though. So that's what you need to have in mind. So it'll be interesting. They are likely to try this, whether it's suitable or not, it'll be taken on a case-by-case basis, I think.
Yeah, okay. And plenty of questions, 3, 4, 5 maybe, coming in around what kind of notification would we expect? We can't just take the tenant's word for it. No. Numerous people asking the same question there. Again, I think hopefully we've covered that. We do expect it to be a formalised document that shows the tenant is on breathing space. You shouldn't just be taking tenant's word for it. They do have to go through this process with a regulated advisor. And indeed, to Tim's point earlier, this will be updated from an IVA record perspective as well. So there will be relevant documentation that you should take from this. And I think it's fair to say, maybe, Tim, if that wasn't provided or forthcoming, then you can't assume that they are on breathing space. We would have to see that document.
We'd have to see it. And as I say, I assume people will start seeing them quite quickly. So we'll be able to see exactly what it looks like. You wouldn't just take the tenant's word. And really, it's the advisor that should be contacting the creditors. It shouldn't be the tenant that's saying, I'm in one of these.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Good morning, Natalie Barton. Natalie asks, is there a chance that debt recovery companies will be chasing debts harder now before the scheme kicks in, which could impact a tenant's ability to pay rent? I think it's hard to say, right, Tim?
No, most debt recovery businesses don't take any prisoners, shall we say. They're usually already doing everything they possibly can to try and enforce the debt as soon as they are instructed. So I'm not sure whether knowing this is coming in would make too much difference. But it's more for their point of view. They're going to have to take these into consideration as well, because if they are trying to chase the debt, then it's possible that they're going to be informed by the advisors that they're going to have to hold off for 60 days if a tenant's in one of these. So, if they're doing their job, they're trying to chase the debt anyway. Whether they're trying to do it any quicker, knowing this is coming into play, that's really based on the instruction and how efficient they are at doing what they do.
Sure. Numerous questions. I think the one in front of me is from Chloe Reynolds. Good morning, Chloe. Asking around the ability to still serve a Section 21. And we actually discussed this at a bit length yesterday, didn't we, Tim?
Yeah.
Indeed, you know, parties can still serve a Section 21. Yeah. Again, it's making sure that there's relevant grounds to do so. And we're probably going to be back in this space, you and me, Tim, in a few months' time, talking about how Section 21 is going to change. So, you can, and that's going to be a route to go down. But for how long, again, as most should be aware, that is up for review. And, you know, with the advent of the Rented Reform Bill, we expect to see Section 21 abolished. But as things stand, as we know now, yes, Section 21 would be able to be used.
Interestingly, just on that point, it was announced this morning in Wales. So for any agents that have properties in Wales, that the Section 21 is actually going to remain under a new regime next year. So that's one positive. Mm. But the Section 21 is going to be permanently 6 months' notice. So instead of the previous 2 months, it's going to permanently be a six-month notice, Section 21. So that's actually following on from what has been brought in during the pandemic over the last year, now permanent measure coming into play in Wales next year.
Yeah, definitely. And interesting to see whether this is the start of, you know, just completely different approaches by the different countries, or indeed that's an indicator to any potential change or settlement on where we are now, frankly, in English law. But again, I think we're probably sort of crystal ball time with that at this stage. Okay, I'm going to move on because I appreciate, please do keep asking questions. I'll try and revert back where we can. But let's talk about, just before we jump onto how possession cases are faring, I just want to talk about the agent's responsibility here. If you just go back one slide, please, Holly, and how the agents could come to it themselves. Because I think with any change, you're always fearful. I know I was an agent, of doing the wrong thing. I just want to do the right thing or make sure I understand where my liability is. This isn't something that should affect agents on a day-to-day basis in terms of an action point, right, Tim? This is something that they may have to be reactive to, but with the appropriate support or protection, actually, this is something that could be quite easily handled.
You'd like to think so. And as we say, we don't want to scaremonger. I don't think a huge number of tenants are actually going to enter into these grieving spaces because they're not going to fulfil the requirements. But obviously, you've got to be mindful if you are notified of one of these, of what you're able to do and not do. And in summary, it's basically no communication with the tenant for 60 days, which is the most difficult thing for agents, particularly when you're so used to being the main part of your job is actually communicating. With your parties. So,
what about other responsibilities letting agents and landlords have, though? Because, you know, if it's no communication, is that no communication just in relation to the debt? Because arguably in that 60 days, my gas safety might need to be done, or you know, there might be works. I take it they can still communicate with the tenants around anything else to do with the property, just not in regards to the debt itself.
100%, and particularly seeing as there are ongoing responsibilities, as you say, just any repair issues, as well as having to obtain relevant certificates and any other issues that may be occurring within the property. It's fine to discuss those and provide communication in those areas, just not about the qualifying debt.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to move on to now what the court, how the court process looks at the moment, and a bit of insights to that. There have been so many questions, and I hope we've covered the vast majority of them all. In terms of where we are on this, given the kind of participation by attendees today, it may well be helpful for us to do another session on this ahead of the ahead of May the 4th. But again, we'll leave that down to sort of the attendees. If you want to understand more information about this, if you think another session on this would be helpful, then please just get in touch and more than happy to set one up that you can all attend again. And we just maybe cover it when we know a little bit more and we're closer to May. Thank you very much for all your questions. We're talking about Breathing Space, Debt Respite. That's a new initiative. There's plenty going on at the moment. So how are possession cases faring in lockdown 3.0? Tim, and this one is close to both of our hearts.
It is. Right, so the in a nutshell, basically cases are not really ending as it stands at the moment. So we've had cases stuck in the court since late 2019 that we expected to end in early 2020 in terms of bailiff orders being set, bailiff dates being set and then being cancelled at the last minute as the first stop in possession claims and any dealings with evicting tenants occurred. It then reopened again back in September for a little while, and some fortunate landlords were actually able to finish off their cases then if they're in that situation. But then the tier situation occurred, so there were different tiers, and the bailiffs were only operating basically in tier one. Then we went into national lockdown again. Since then, basically, the bailiffs have not been able to operate in any case unless one of the exemptions occurs. And these exemptions have actually been changing as we've been going along. Initially, there was an exemption related to rent arrears, but those rent arrears had to be 9 months worth of arrears prior to March 2020. So we're talking about some really quite severe rent arrears for an exemption to be used at that point. When the bailiff ban was extended at the end of January to 31st of March, that exemption actually got changed to just 6 months rent arrears. So that was based on what I was saying earlier, some lobbying by basically the National Residential Landlords Association and other interested parties in the industry, just making it clear to the government exactly how difficult it was to use that previous exemption of 9 months prior to March 2020. But what I can say is that it's still quite difficult to use one of these exemptions because you've got to make an application to the court for a judge to be happy that the exemption is in place. So what that means is an application. So you have to fill out the form, a court fee. So you have to actually pay the fee for the application. Generally, unless you want to do it yourself, you'd need some representation because a hearing will be held. What we're also seeing is that when the directions orders come back for this hearing, they're asking for a lot of information. So that means a whole bundle has to be prepared. So you're talking about quite a large amount of work that has to be undertaken just from a legal point of view to actually get a judge to look at the case and agree that an exemption is in place. So it's not easy to use, although it is there, it is in place and it is a legal option. And we have had a few of these come through now where we've made applications for exemptions and bailiff dates are starting to get set in that situation. So, yeah.
And we've seen the same from a rent protection point of view as well. And I think I want to sort of just highlight here, and this isn't a good law pitch, it's certainly not a Hamilton phrase, which we both do a similar sort of function.
Yep.
But this is why a pre-claims, a mediation process is so important. Because one, it either helps resolve the process in a way that all parties are happy with without going down this extended route. Two, if you go down this extended route, the amount of information that is being needed and your ability to show that you have tried to work with the tenants, that you've assessed their financial situation, that you've made every attempt to obviously understand how you could find a different recourse than the one that you're going through at that point in time, is becoming more and more important, isn't it, Tim? So it's that level of detail and reality that's really helping cases sort of go through in some aspects. So again, whether that's part of the good law process that we provide, whether it's other providers, I know Landlord Action and Hamilton Fraser Group deliver a similar kind of scheme. You know, we recognise that there's an importance there. And for us, that was a thing back in March last year. We probably need to get on top of this. And I'm very thankful we did, because it's proving to be beneficial in resolving cases, whether through the court process or not. So let's talk about PD55C, because this sounds like something out of Star Wars, Tim. Maybe not something on the tip of everybody's tongue.
No. So that stands for Practice Direction 55C, and that's a court direction in terms of how the courts deal with cases, possession cases during the COVID pandemic. And what that did was it brought in, first of all, the reactivation notice process. So while the claims were stayed up to the end of September last year, with that, the courts looking at possession claims again after September, there's a process whereby either the claimant or the defendant has to provide notice to the courts that the claim should start again. When the practice direction 55C was first brought in, that notification had to be provided to the court by the 31st of January, just gone. It's now extended through to the end of April. So what that means is it's given landlords a little bit more time to reactivate their cases if they haven't done so already. Obviously, at Landlord Action, we have to go through a process of going through all of our live cases and making sure that these notices were provided to the court in good time. And this was done back when the practice direction came into place, but this has given a little bit more breathing space. But the other thing that it's done is the courts have brought in this review hearing process. So what they do is, on all possession claims, they require a bundle of papers to be provided to the court and to the defendant, the tenant, 14 days prior to one of these review hearings being set. And we need to provide the court with information that the claimant knows about in terms of any impact that COVID has had on the tenants. So what this is supposed to, the thinking was that this would encourage some communication between the landlord and the tenant prior to this happening, to see whether they could try and enter into any kind of arrangements between themselves to try and get the matter resolved. But what we're seeing really is that it's just an opportunity for the judges, for a judge to actually get a bit more information about the case and potentially how severe the situation is, because you've also got to provide updated rent statement and other information about the claim at that point in time. If on viewing the papers a judge is happy that there are definitely grounds for a possession claim to be made, what they're then doing is setting a substantive hearing, and that is the equivalent of the previous possession claim hearing that was in place on normal Section 8 claims. And it just gives, again, it's an opportunity, is with the parties, they are then able to just again provide information to the judge about why a possession order should be granted. And as we know, in most Section 8 claims, it's a mandatory ground. So if the arrears are in place, there's actually a mandatory ground for awarding a possession order, and the judge can give it can award the possession order at that point in time. But what the tenant might have is some kind of counterclaim. There might be some disrepair issues. There might be other reasons why the tenant has some form of counterclaim. And what we're then seeing is if the case is more complicated than is just able to be dealt with in a short 10-minute hearing, the judge will probably adjourn with directions.
This is about investment as well, isn't it, in terms of the time and the actions you're taking before we get to the stage. And I'll come back to the pre-claims process that we deliver, or indeed the mediation process that they're available out there, because you know, certainly for us, we automate that process to get the information from the tenant and guarantor. We deep dive into all of that and present it back with a bow on it to ensure that we've taken those steps. And we think that we're obliged to do that, because agents have a lot on at the moment. And also from an insurance perspective, if we're going to make sure that we've got the applicable grounds to proceed and get the outcome we all want, we now recognise actually this is a staple diet of it rather than a nice to have. So it's something to be aware for agents out there. If you're not utilising services like Landlord Actions or the Good Lord Rent Protection process, which includes free mediation processing, then you know you need to make sure you understand exactly what those processes are. We do have documentation on our website, and I'm sure there'll be documentation Hamilton Fraser Group can supply that gives you a starting point that says, okay, here's the framework. If that's something you want to manage yourselves.
And interestingly, there is actually now a court-appointed mediation part of this process as well. We haven't actually seen any in our cases yet, but the government have provided some funding to a charity, a mediation charity, to actually, so judges at the review hearing can actually set mediation appointments formally, where that on the papers it looks like there is the opportunity for trying to get the matter resolved if it hasn't already been done. So for example, they haven't already used your online process, or they haven't appointed PRS mediators earlier in the process to try and resolve this. From our point of view, it's more just an opinion, I think, than anything else, but the earlier you can enter into a mediation process, the more successful it is. I'm a little bit skeptical about a case being set for a mediation after a review hearing, because I think we're going to be a bit too far down the line at that point in time for a mediation to be successful. But I may be wrong, but from our experience, entering into mediation as early as possible is where you get your best result.
Yeah, agreed. And we're getting plenty of questions. I think one of them is from Robert. So good morning, Robert, around our rent protection policy here at Good Lord. Does it cover these issues? And indeed it does. I just want to make that clear. It only covers these issues and pays for a maximum of 15 months, plus two payments of 75% of the month's rent after vacant possession has been obtained. So arguably you could benefit from up to 16 and a half months worth of rent if it went full course. But it also includes an automated free pre-claims mediation process too. And I think we're relatively unique in that respect from an insurance perspective, including that as part of the process. So if you're looking for a level of protection and also looking for that level of support, then you know we're one port of call you might want to drop into. But again, it's not really about pushing these services to say, just make sure the protection is there. Yep. If you haven't got protection, making sure you've got an understanding of what you need to do as letting agents for your landlords too.
On that, if anyone wants to contact Landlord Action, obviously you can find our website, it's quite easy to see at landlordaction.co.uk. But if anyone wants to contact me directly, my email address is just tim.frome@landlordaction.co.uk. So feel free to drop me a line and I'll try and get back to you this week.
We are all in this together, and that sounds all very cliche, but it's quite a fluid situation. And I think there's a strong alignment between our business and Tim's, in the sense of we are actually wanting to help. And, you know, if that results in you guys being a customer of either Landlord Action or Good Lord, then fantastic. It would be a pleasure. But at the same time, we also recognise that this is a minefield at the moment. Hmm. So if you need any reassurance, any questions you have, we'll try our very best to help wherever we can. Okay, so I'm conscious of time and appreciate everyone has
been. I thought this was going to be a half hour webinar.
Yeah, exactly right. Thank you so much, everybody, for their engagement. And we did run a poll at the start of this process, which is one of feedback. So everybody's sort of got an understanding of where the thoughts are from letting agents at the moment. The first question we asked was what percentage of your managed properties have gone into rent arrears in the last 6 months? So we're looking to understand what we're seeing at the moment. And 42% of people who answered the poll said that 1-4% of their managed properties have gone into rent arrears in the last 6 months. 26% of people said 5-9%. That's relatively high, higher than I maybe thought. 12% of people said 10-19% of their managed properties had gone into arrears in the last 6 months. And worryingly, it doesn't stop there. So 8% of attendees said 20-29% of their managed properties had gone into arrears, with a further 3% saying 30-39% of their managed properties have gone into arrears in the last 6 months. And finally, 1% of attendees said 40-49%. So nearly half of their entire managed stock had gone into arrears in the last 6 months. So interesting feed from there, and maybe backs up, I suppose, some of the points we've made today, but also highlights the problems that tenants and landlords are facing. And it doesn't just go back to pre-March. We've got these elongated cases. This is something that is going to be sticking around for some time, I think, Tim, unfortunately. So again, making sure you've got the right process in place is probably helpful. Yeah. The second question we asked was on the basis of what you knew at the start of the webinar. If you would start now, how long would you expect the eviction process to take? Surprisingly, nobody thought it would only take 0-2 months. For some, though, they did think they would be able to get satisfaction between 3 and 5 months. And that was 4% of people. 23% of people said it would take 6 to 8 months. A further 1%, so 4%, 27% of attendees said 9 to 11 months. 28% of people said 12 to 14 months. And 17% of attendees felt that it would take 15 or more months to evict somebody. We're going to keep looping back into these polls for the people who are more regular attendees of our webinars and use this data again when we look back, because, you know, I'm relatively optimistic that things do get better in 2021. I think we do see timelines, you know, decreasing. I think we do get quicker, hopefully, access to your properties as and when obviously justified. But, you know, ultimately, we're planning for the worst and hoping for the best, I suppose, in a lot of respects. Anything to add to that, Tim? Anything surprising from those poll outcomes?
I guess anyone thinking that the eviction process was going to take 0 to 2 months, it's good that there was no one that thought it'd be able to do it that quick. Although, interestingly, if you do enter into some mediation nice and quickly, you might be able to get the matter resolved straight away, because what we find is that sometimes if you make a sensible offer to the tenant and enable them to find somewhere else to live, then that can actually resolve the matter straight away.
Indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've seen plenty of those cases, which again is a thought that landlords need to go through. Like, I appreciate they may not be comfortable to give an inch, because why should they? They've had a tough year and a bit themselves. Yep. However, the change in behaviour, the change in the relationship thereafter by not working with the tenant may be something that creates further problems down the line. And on the basis of this timeline, I don't think there's any landlord out there that wants to go with no rental income whatsoever for sort of 12 to 14 months, which seems to be the where it could possibly go if it continues to elongate. Again, it's hard to have a real handle on extended times at the moment, as we're just seeing for cases of fulfill. But again, we'll revert back to you all and give you some qualifying data to show you how long cases are going. We are unfortunately out of time. The last few slides were basically book a call with Good Lord if you want to. Hopefully this webinar has been useful. We also have another webinar coming up with your good friend Tim Sean Hooker, head of redress at the Property Redress Scheme. So I'll be speaking to him on the 18th of March. Couldn't find the date then, 18th of March. So another instalment from the Good Lord webinar series. If you want to understand more about anything we've discussed today, please don't hesitate to reach out to either myself or Tim directly, or indeed the two businesses. You can visit our website at goodlord.co/bookacall. And if you've got any questions around any aspects of our services, both parties will be more than happy to help. Again, conscious of time, I'm going to cut it off there. Thank you very much, Tim, for your time. Fantastic insight into what we're going to be seeing from a debt respite perspective, and indeed the eviction process. As always, really useful, and I hope is useful for our attendees.
Yep.
Thank you very much, and have a great day, guys.
Great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.